Sci-Fi Radio.
Extra.
Welcome. You're tuned into Kawaii Radio, the podcast for diving into the world of anime, manga, and all things otaku culture. I'm Kyle. With me is Kenny and Aaron.
Hey.
And this one is an extra because I literally got back to Perth last night after traveling the last week and a bit for work. So we're taking it a bit easy. So
Mr. Fancy Man traveling around for work. Yeah. Ooh, Mr. Celebrity.
No, it's definitely not. It's look, is it fun work? Yes.
He's drinking champagne in first class.
No, I'm definitely not.
He's eating peanuts in third class.
Yes, exactly.
He's flying around Australia doing camera work. Like, is that not like Fancy Pants McGee?
It sounds, but it's exhausting. And I wasn't meant to be traveling this much when I started this job. This is only, we'll be heading into week five now, and I've now been to three different sites in that period. So, and interviewed the whole executive team from the United States who have come over here and done like videos with them and stuff. And they're all just like, oh yeah, he's actually pretty good. I'm sitting there going, everyone else is like, ooh. And I'm just like, cause I've got the journalism training. I'm like, they're just people, like, you know, find what they like and then get them talking and you're good.
Easy.
So yeah. Anyway, this episode, we did kind of allude to it in the last one, but we're going back to the Sengoku period, you see. And it turns out that's apparently kind of like disputed when that started and ended.
Call him by his proper name, Sen Kakarot.
So we're talking Sword of the Stranger. It is a fantastic film from 2007.
I told you.
And it's by Studio Bones. And yep, you are right. I was saying to Emma when we were watching it, it's like, oh, if this ends up being rubbish, we've got so much grief we can give Ken. let's get stuck in. You got the popcorn?
And a slushie.
Ooh, Maltesers.
Shh. It's starting. Cinema Club.
When have I ever steered you wrong?
Twice.
Yeah, back when you told us to go left when we should have gone right.
Right,
and
yes,
then that
Amsterdam.
Time when you called right and we were supposed to go left.
Anyway, so Sword of the Stranger. Kenny, you discovered this. How did you find it?
Randomly.
Yeah, okay.
It crossed my YouTube feed. Oh. One of the fight scenes just sort of appeared on my list because I was subscribed to a channel which exclusively looks at Sakuga.
Ah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Any scene in an anime which just looks, it will, like, take the clip and just put it on there. And I'm just like, okay, I'll check this out. I get some good anime ideas from this, things to look at. And I saw the fight scene for Sword of the Stranger. I'm just like, cool, this is so smooth. It's so flowy. This must be a recent anime. It is not.
No, it's 2007.
This is a 2007 anime with, like, I would say current gen animation techniques.
I'd say it's probably better than some current gen.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. But yeah, so for context, this was produced by Studio Bones, who, you know, they did My Hero Academia, Macademu.
That's over.
And quite a few others. They've been around for quite a long time. Mob Psycho, Space Dandy, Bungo Stray Dogs, Full Metal Alchemist, the OG one.
You can see a lot of the DNA from like a lot of those places in Sword of the Stranger. There is, especially in the character design as well. Mm-hmm. It's there is a bit of Full Metal Alchemist to it.
Definitely. Now, so this is...
You mean how there's a kid with a dog?
There's that, yes.
And nothing bad happens
nothing
to them.
Nothing bad happens to the kid and the dog. They stay separate. I love how that remains a point of trauma, like 20 years
forever, yeah. So, as I mentioned, this is set in the Sengoku period. It is roughly from 1454 to 1568. It's kind of contested when it started and ended because there's like three different incidences that are set like 20 years apart at each end that people are like, no, that's the beginning and that's the end. So, look, it was about a 150-year period where there was fighting between clans and groups like that. It caused a lot of incidences. It was during the time when they did still have the samurais and the ronins and the local lords and stuff like that. And it's kind of what led into the Edo period that we know today. So it's pretty interesting. It's a really like traditional period that is used for these type of films, which is like, you know, the period of where everyone is, you know, I am bound by honor to my lord and respected, blah, 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 blah.
Still sort of just a little bit in the feudal age for a while.
Exactly. So this had quite a long production run by the sounds of it. It was not too long. It was only 2 years, but the idea apparently was kind of conceived a couple of years even prior to that. Mm-hmm. And then it was just, oh, we've got to kind of get it. So it was commissioned in 2005 by Studio Bones, and it was then directed by Masahiro Ando and written by Fumihiko Takayama. And it ended up having a lot of really well-known voice actors at that time involved into it, which is kind of cool. But yeah, it released in Japan in September 2007, and then it began limited release in the US in 2008 in the February. It got really good receptions. It was even considered suitable to actually go in for the Academy Awards, but it did not make the shortlist. So, I mean, yeah, it's typical. It was Japan's submission for the best animated feature of that year. Now, we know back then they just pretty much didn't care unless it was Studio Ghibli.
Was it The Incredibles that won that year?
What was in 2007?
It was the 81st Academy Awards, and I think Slumdog Millionaire won the best directing and picture was...
Okay.
So that was a different year. Let me find out. Animation. Wally.
If you put those two films in front of me and asked me which one's better animated.
Yeah, they only allowed three films into the animated section at this in this period. So it was Wall-E, Bolt, and Kung Fu Panda. Now, don't get me wrong. CGI. Wall-E and Kung Fu Panda did deserve to be there. They were cultural phenomenons at the time.
That was back when Pixar Bolt, still had not a soul. So much.
Bolt was fantastic. Thank you very much. My son used to love watching that movie. He'd sit there in just his nappy and a popcorn bucket on his head and watch the entire thing.
Okay.
I have photos of this.
That is adorable, but also that boy ain't right.
It was
He's my son.
It was also the year of The Dark Knight where Heath Ledger won Best Actor in a Supporting Role after he'd passed as well. So quite a big year for the awards. And it was, in fairness, this was kind of back when it was still good, but they weren't really looking outside of the US and UK. So kind of limited their catchment, but the films were still good, so it was okay, if that made sense. Anyway.
I know it's just like it's an indictment when like best animation is all CGI.
I mean...
And soon it'll be all AI.
Mm-hmm. Nah. People have pushed back so hard, so we're not going to get into that today.
People have, but as we've firmly established, the inhabitants of Hollywood aren't what you'd call people.
Yeah, but that's they care because they stop making money, which is why the films that are using AI aren't doing as well at the box office, and they're starting to go, ooh, okay. Anyway.
Can we say cogsucker on the show?
No. So
we need to figure out what slurs for AI are okay.
So, anyway... there is the reception of it was quite good, and the film actually did quite a lot of international film festivals. It apparently went to about 10 to 15 of them. So the notable ones were the Amsterdam Fantastic Film Festival, Animagic, Asia Film Fest, Asia Pacific Screen Awards, Camera Japan, Fantasopia, which is the International Fantastic Film Festival of Porto Alegre, and the Leeds International Film Festival, along with the London Barbican's Japanimation event, and the Sci-Fi London Oktoberfest. I didn't know that was a thing. So
interesting.
Yeah, it did win Best Animated Feature at several of these awards, including Fantaspia, which is Brazil, and was nominated as the Best Animated Feature Film in the Asia Pacific Screen Awards. So it was actually considered and taken seriously elsewhere. It's just that Hollywood was like, only three.
So circling back a little bit, what you're telling me is if we go to London in October, we can get so much beer and enjoy a sci-fi festival.
I mean, in general,
now I'm kind of wondering if that still even exists.
Yeah, London is different these days.
Also known as the London International Festival of Sci-Fi and Fantastic Film, or SFL, annual United Kingdom-based film festival dedicated to sci-fi and fantasy. It was in 2023. It was hosted at the Prince Charles Cinema in London. The Picture House Central, Garden Cinema, and Rich Mix. I guess maybe they did Oktoberfest because it was in October that year.
Oh, okay.
They also award the Arthur C. Clarke Award as part of this.
Nice.
So this actually does sound pretty good. It covers everything, including short films as well. So, like, and horror film festivals.
Hmm.
So, yeah, kind of interesting. I'll save that for later. That could be fun to go to. We'll just go to London.
In October one year. Because, you know, we do that frequently.
And you know which movie we can do for the what we're watching for that? Are the K-On! Go to London?
We've already done that. Yes. You know this.
Do it again.
Anyway, so this film, sort of The Stranger, I wasn't expecting to enjoy it as much as I did.
Mm-hmm.
It is very much your traditional, like, you know, boy and, you know, hero protecting him sort of vibe. Yeah, what do they call it? Like something in Cub or something? Like
Wolf
that?
And Cub. Wolf and Cub. There's so many of these. Like the actual Wolf and Cub was allegedly used as the inspiration for Mandalorian and Grogu first season.
Sure it was.
There is some crossover. There is some evidence for that. It is like a samurai pushing a little baby cart with a small child in it, getting constantly attacked by assassins and stuff.
Mm.
So, but it's like, there are so many of these. Like, it's a very kind of, how would you put it? It's a traditional kind of a storytelling model of, like, you know, the grizzled warrior protecting small innocent.
Mm.
But I think they did a good job with this one of differentiating it. The boy himself is not entirely helpless. He has small Shiba Inu pet, which is bloodthirsty.
Yeah.
Kills a guy like...
Toby Maru deserves to be best boy.
He's got a significant body count.
Do we still have that as an anime award? The best animal companion?
We had like the best animal or mascot character. Yeah. I think we stopped doing it after someone misunderstood one of the characters.
Yeah.
But also like just time saving thing. But
Valid. Yeah. We're giving it to 2007 Toby Maru.
For every year.
That's why the award stopped.
He's a Shiba Inu good boy and he killed a guy once. It's great.
Twice.
Oh yeah, that's twice.
Three times.
Three times?
I watched it last night. His body count's like four.
We gotta do the Cinema Sins sort of run where
exactly. Anyway, animation is great. Very similar sort of. Let's be honest. When you're doing something in like the Sengoku area in that traditional, you know, era of warring clans and lords, there is a look.
Mm-hmm.
It is kind of washed out a little bit, but it is still like a beautiful, beautiful line work, detail, small attention to small details as well. Similar to the Dororo reboot, it's very clear like that is of the same vein. It is the Wolf and Cub ideal.
Very close to Dororo, especially in like the color palette and the background, the environment. It's kind of sets the mood of this like very lawless, dreary, cold, and depressing time.
Mm-hmm.
That opening scene at the inn with all the bandits.
Mm.
Oh, yes.
That inn was almost identical to the one from Seven Samurai.
Yeah.
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 Like, I was watching it and I was like, that, I've seen that. I recognize that.
Is this a Euro Camp situation where, like, the place exists in real life and they've just sort of used it a bunch of times?
I mean, it may just be, like, it's a historical building that they use for film sets.
I gotta check that out.
I mean, there's definitely a specific style of building used from that era.
Yeah.
And it appears in everything.
It's the fact that it is, like, sort of just wedged into, like, this, like, side of a mountain though.
Yeah.
It's the location which is so...
Yeah, definitely.
So eye-catching.
Let's be honest here. So this is a mix of that old school Seven Samurai style of film mixed with like the elements of like your Chinese sort of... Oh, I've got the term written down, but I want to explain it first. It's Chinese low fantasy and martial arts, which is referred to as wuxia.
Wuxia,
thank you. I've been wondering because I've only seen it written everywhere. So wuxia, which is essentially crouching dragon, hidden tiger.
Oh, there he is.
There's a sock puppet.
Crouching dragon's a lot more intimidating than that.
Right.
I don't know. Hidden dragon is bloody intimidating because what if someone just says there's a dragon hiding somewhere in this room?
Oh, I thought we were talking about hidden tiger, crouching dragon.
I was going to say, what?
Also, hidden tiger is scary.
Yeah, but like, if there's a crouching dragon in front of you and someone's like, there's a hidden target, you're not going to take your eyes off the dragon.
Yeah.
I think that's the point. Yeah. It's using your eye contact with the dragon.
Do not break eye contact.
Actually, no, you're right. If they were like, there's a hidden dragon in this room, but there's a crouching tiger in front of you, you're going to stay locked onto the tiger. It's the threat you can see.
Exactly.
Oh, no.
Otherwise, you take your eyes off both.
Yeah, this is true.
And I know there's actual meaning to that. And great. Now I need to watch Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon again.
I've never seen it.
Mm. Oh, it's beautiful. Like, it's really good. But
Kenny, I haven't seen films.
Mean, you haven't seen what?
I haven't seen films in general.
Oh, true.
Oh, you probably haven't seen Hero either.
The TV series?
No. Was a Wuxia film that was made and produced and
Jackie
shot.
Jackie Chan?
Jet Li, in fact. It was shot and produced and shown in China. And Quentin Tarantino, a massive film buff, he saw it just because he's just like looking at random stuff. And he's just like, my God, this movie is amazing. I am going to like buy some like presentation rights to it just to put it on cinemas in the West. And he did, and it made bank because it was just like, whoa.
Was this Last Hero of China?
No, just Hero.
Just Hero. When was that?
That was like 2006. 2002?
Yeah, and his character's called Nameless.
That's right.
Which is, you know, what we had with this as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So,
no name.
Oh, yes, we should go the plot for what we're actually talking about.
So, this focuses on a young boy called Kotaro and his dog, which is...
Toby Maru,
thank you. And they are being pursued by Chinese assassins, essentially.
Well, it's like you don't immediately learn that they are Chinese assassins. They appear to be like a very almost multicultural group.
They do, but they're speaking in Mandarin.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
You make a good point. If you don't know the dialect, you wouldn't pick up on it. So, fair enough. They run into... I love how like IMDb is like, his name is No Name. And it's like, it is, but that's not what his name is. His name is Nanashi, which means no name. But, yeah. He's a mysterious stranger who gets pulled into the chase, and their unlikely companions form a bond over saving the dog from a poison attack, and chaos erupts when the assassins find Kotaro. They must face their pasts and a horrible fate before it begins.
Yes, it's Nanashi is your typical wandering warrior type. His sword is tied and bound, not to be used with the flat blade part. And he's got this whole mysterious backstory thing going. It's like it hits all of the typical notes. All
it does.
Of almost, I struggle to call them stereotypes, but there's just... These are the standard story beats. This is what you build a house with when you've got wood.
Yeah.
It's the basic foundation.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, they are kind of fundamental to the way these types of stories are told, isn't it? So
There's the mystery, though, of why are these foreign, strange, and highly potent assassins chasing after a small child?
And why are they allowed into Japan during a period where the borders would probably have been closed?
Indeed.
So
it's like, ooh, mystery. Yeah.
Now, we won't tell you that. You're going to have to watch it yourself, and you can do that on Crunchyroll.
The payoff to it is
it's
fascinating.
Really good.
The location for it, it's bloody stunning.
Yeah. There's one thing I did notice, because I watched this literally last night after I got in, and it's like, it's got really good attention to detail on the small things, like vibrations in buildings. Like, the wood moves when someone gets pushed into it. They don't just move it out the way. It vibrates as if it's been hit. They also have, again with wood, how it splinters looks actually like wood splintering. It's not a clean cut or a break.
This is mid-2000s animation.
Yeah.
This is peak 2000s.
Yeah.
What do you mean mid?
Yeah. the hand placements, like the way the fingers move towards their weapons and stuff like that, again, mirroring those traditional samurai films. Like, they do a really good job with it. And what was the last thing? Wind. The way wind interacts with the environment throughout the entire film. It's most notable in the last scenes, but throughout the whole thing, pay close attention, because even things like the fishing wire move in the wind, sort of thing. And it's really like, wow, they actually cared.
That's the thing about this movie, is so much bloody passion for like the genre. So much passion for animation and like getting everything down perfect. There is so much beautiful material in this movie. And I have heard almost nobody talking about it.
I know, right?
What the absolute hell?
The bath scene, when you see the black start to run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, hang on, is that? No, really?
Yeah.
And then, like, they go through this whole thing with it. I'm like, wow, that's... Like, they've done that perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how the color changes when it's being applied as well. It's like, it's not just like instant, boom, now that's colored black. It's like, no. That it requires a process. It's mm-hmm. like, yeah, right, good.
Yeah.
So, like...
It's so beautifully done.
One thing I want to note as well, and some of our listeners will be aware of this already, but... Anime typically runs at a lower frame rate than standard film. So typically, when you're doing cinematic films, you go for about 24 frames per second. Mm-hmm. Anime is normally between 8 to 12, and backgrounds can be as low as 6 because they don't need to move as much. And there's something about action anime films where it feels like they actually up their frame rate. And I haven't been able to find any good production notes on this because it's kind of more of a niche film, it seems. However... It definitely feels like they're using more than 12 frames a second mm-hmm. in these action scenes. It is too fluid and too smooth for it to be at that rate. Or if it is at that rate, holy cow.
They've done some magic.
Yeah, because it's very rare you see that level of choreography in fight scenes where it looks that smooth without them having to put in very strange strange shots to make the transition from one move to another make sense.
Sorry, you just you gave me flashbacks to the bloody Naruto pain fight.
It's exactly where my brain went, but God, that was a whole damn other thing. That wasn't even to do with like the frame rate. That was just we had to hire someone else because our other staff were burnt out by the time we got to animate it. So, but yeah, the action scenes are incredible, and they actually had a fight choreographer on staff for it to draw them, which is insane. So it's really well done. It's really refined. You can tell they spent a lot of time planning each of these combat scenes to make sure that they had the impact that they were looking for.
And it's just it's another like small detail. I go in for small details. Like I was telling you guys about Izakaya Nobu and mm-hmm. how he's just like, oh no, this restaurant has glass, that means it's very expensive. And it's just like nobody ever picks up on that. But in Sword of the Stranger, they are hinting at one of the assassins that's going around looking for a small child. And they're saying, oh, they say he's got hair of yellow and bright blue eyes. Oh, he must be a demon.
Yeah.
It's just like, because they are so isolated from the outside, because there hasn't been the mass proliferation of trade from the West yet, that they have no idea what, like, your traditional kind of, I think he's Dutch.
He could be.
What your, like, very ultra-European Nordic looks like. And so they're like, oh, he's got to be supernatural, must be a demon. His hair is a different color.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that as well, because I was talking to Emma about this while we were watching it, and like, we know that it was like, it depends on when in the Sengoku period this is actually set.
Of course.
But during when we had the Russian Empire from about 1700 to 1890, you would get a lot of people from the West kind of sent over to the far east of Russia just because either they were heading there for work or they'd been banished by the government because of things they'd done, or they'd been sent over as prisoners of war or whatever it might have been. And because of that, the island off the coast of... off the coast, east coast of Russia and north of Hokkaido.
Of Mongolia?
North
Mongolia would be where it hits Russia, so...
Yeah, no, I'll bring up a map, but it's a location they visit in Golden Kamuy, because they end up going over the sea to that area to the north. And people from Poland have ended up there, and this is in like the 1870s.
That's mad.
And it's just because of the way things were. But at this point in time, steam trains aren't a major thing. So, however this person got over there, it would have been a long journey.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's kind of interesting. It's like, yeah, there would be people there, but just like in Japan, it would be kind of rare. So, the same sort of thing. How did they get from there to China to then come across for this? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of questions in that story. It was possible because we had the Silk Road, for instance, and all that sort of stuff. However, where they came from is kind of left a little bit up in the air, and I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I really do like that. I also like the fact that there's kind of an element of the Chinese group being like the Fire Nation from Avatar. It's one of the girls kind of has the same hairstyle as Azula. Yeah, and I'm just like, okay, yeah, the Fire Nation attacked.
that's more the Avatar studio cribbing like notes off like cultural appearances and like that sort of thing at the time. I couldn't word that correctly. I'm sorry.
No, I get what you mean though. Like those were probably the hairstyles that were in use at that time. But yeah, interestingly, so Sword of the Strange is currently on 91% on Rotten Tomatoes on audience score, and that's with over 1,000 ratings. And both of the critics' ratings gave it a fresh score. I don't know how that's kind of been done from these. But
like, that's the thing. It's like you see Sword of the Stranger mentioned every so often in like these are some of the like big great animes, but it simply isn't in the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
And I almost find that bothersome.
Yeah, but you get the same with Redline.
This is true.
Yes.
And if you haven't seen Redline, whoo, go watch it wherever you can. It's a bit difficult to find on streaming, so if you have to find shady places to do
Aaron,
so.
Aaron, have you seen Redline?
Yes.
Good.
That was one of the first things you guys made me do when I joined the show.
It's a rite of passage.
That and watch every Ghibli movie.
Look, it is required reading.
Look, you did that yourself, and that's because you were on night shift, and it was being available throughout the evening. Because it had just gone to all the streaming platforms, hadn't it?
You say that like it's a trial.
Some of it is.
Yeah.
Because if it's not the ones that's done by Hiao, then it's kind of like, ooh.
Fair.
The one that's probably controversial is Where the Wind Rises. The Wind Rising? Or
yeah, Where the the Wind Rises.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one I was kind of like, ooh.
Because I think that was done by his son. No, that was the other one.
No, that was him.
No, it was. Yeah.
It was. But like, I know a lot of people enjoy it. It's just not for me.
Nah, fair enough. Yeah. But yeah, look, this is a great film. Like, if you haven't seen it, you need to go watch it. Did you guys watch it dubbed or subbed?
Dubbed.
Subbed.
Subbed here as well. So I really thought they did a great job, but what was the dub like?
It was, I'm assuming, very similar to the sub because the Mandarin was still Mandarin.
Yeah, that's...
Oh, wow.
That was an interesting note. I did actually hear that when I was switching between them.
Yeah. The Mandarin came up with subtitles in both Japanese and English.
Mm.
Which is a nice touch.
Yeah. What's interesting is that a lot of the actors who are doing the Japanese dub of this are TV actors.
Hey.
Mm. So I misread when my notes where it was like they're, you know, been in a lot of things, but they're all like TV series actors.
Don't suppose you've got the English cast?
English cast is
Rie Takahashi
in everything.
That lady's a machine.
She is. I don't, but let me go back to my list here because I feel like I read the list somewhere and was like, that doesn't look like it's anyone major we know.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, it's not going to be what was the Heron? Ghibli
Boy
movie.
And a Heron, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. With Robert Pattinson as a goblin guy doing this voice the whole time.
And Mark Hamill and who's the Green Goblin again?
Oh, Defoe, yeah.
Yeah.
I will get you next time, Spider-Man!
Flies off on Totoro.
Totoro!
Oh, God.
The Green Totoro.
All right. Japanese companies. Wow, this is a long list.
Spider-Man versus Pocoroso.
English cast. For Kotaru, we've got Aidan Drummond. And for Nanashi, we've got Michael Adam Thwaite. I'd recognize both those names. So Adam Drummond has been in Inuyasha. He has been in Powerpuff Girls Z as Boomer. He was in World Trigger.
Can we do a Powerpuff Girls Z episode?
I didn't even know that was a thing. Is it like proper
it's
Japanese?
Anime style Powerpuff Girls.
So
that's really cute.
It's incredible.
Oh, there's a manga too.
Yes. It's proper Japanese Powerpuff Girls.
I think it counts. God damn it.
Michael.
They made the magical girls.
Michael Adam Thwaite, who voices Nanashi, has been in a lot of non-anime roles, but he's got a rather extensive cast list. Mostly, similarly, World Trigger, Zoids Wild, he was Baby, Boombox, Goat, Quaid, Shopkeep. He was in a lot of Mobile Suit Gundam.
I thought that was one name. Baby Boombox Shop.
No.
Baby Boombox Shop Kid.
He was in Death. He did do the Death Note live action dubs.
No. Japanese ones, not American ones.
Yeah.
Wow, those have dubs.
Yeah, they do.
Wow.
So he plays Anthony Resta Anthony Ray Penbar. And yeah, so it looks like...
So the cast list is very like from the anime voice actor scene, kind of.
Not really. They're just kind of more US voice actor scene, if that makes sense. Like a lot of them have been involved in stuff outside of anime.
Nickelodeon,
Barbie,
Cartoon
A Perfect
Network.
Christmas, Next Avengers, Heroes of Tomorrow... Tony Hawk in Boom Boom Sabotage, like all sorts of random productions.
Jesus Christ, is that Tony Hawk?
So it kind of feels like they potentially were behind the scenes, if that makes sense. So like they're involved with, they're attached to a studio and they sometimes get called in for the work. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're doing other stuff
like
outside
I've
that.
I've heard the English dub, it wasn't so bad, but no. it's like strange that it's like almost nobody associated directly with anime was called in for this.
Mm. Well, it was also 2007.
I guess.
There's not really a big niche for anime at the time. Like, it's starting
apart
to
from four kids.
Yeah. Well, on that note, like, as you said, they were quite ahead on quite a few things in this film. So, the moving shots that are used throughout the film, that didn't become a thing until, like, 2015, 2016. They were doing that 2007. So these are like first person perspective views during combat or moving up a building. They also used movement a lot. It's not overused or out of place though, which I think was the most important thing. Like the tower climb scene was beautifully done because the camera stays static as they're walking around a spiral, but it's basically panning around the entire thing and you see the background go around. And then
which is a magnificent shot.
The horse ride down through the valley and up.
Yes.
That was incredible. They're all beautifully done. They're all handcrafted as well. It's not like CG animation. So whoever was in charge of doing this, like, holy cow, I hope they're still getting work because it's phenomenal. Surprisingly, I want to point out the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
It is used to great effect. It is used in the way that traditional cinema uses music. The Japanese and Western sense, because they use it to heighten anxiety and tension in the right scenes. They use it
it's
for
fantastic
combat
in the final battle.
Yeah, to increase the momentum of it, to make it feel faster paced. Especially like the thrumming of the bass drum and stuff like that. It's like, wow. It really contributes to the cinematic moments and lifts it above what it could have been. So, yeah. And I do want to talk about the final battle without actually spoiling anything, but it's brutal as hell.
Yes,
it doesn't take the idea of war and combat lightly. People die. Named characters die with pretty
nameless
much...
Nameless characters.
Yeah, with literally no ceremony. You're just like, we've known this guy for 45 minutes and he's gone. Onwards. You're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's so, like this person has been built up, gone.
Yeah.
A bit, don't want to almost mention it, but a bit Game of Thrones-ish.
Yeah, like it's really well done, and like especially like when you think of how anime normally treats character deaths, it's always a big like, oh my god, they're gone. It doesn't.
Here's a flashback of their whole life and their motivation.
Exactly. This is much more in line with those classic samurai films where it's like they're gone and their existence has ended, and we're not going to dwell on it. We've got more important things to deal with because we're in a battle.
Well, yeah, that was definitely the period. Like
yeah.
That period of time, that was happening constantly, and it was a very sudden thing where it just happened and you had to process it then and there and move on, because if you lingered on it or if you thought about it, that was you next.
Yeah, which is crazy. Like, hot damn. Yeah. But yeah, look, I mean, this is... It is a standout film. And it really deserves a lot more attention than it's received. And it's kind
Kenny's of... happy he had a win.
Yeah. Look, I mean, you generally are pretty good with the stuff you pick. I will give you credit for it.
I like to think I'm very, very picky and very
Oh, we know.
Critical.
We know. But I think it was a good call. Like, well done. So yeah, look, go and watch it. It is Crunchyroll. There are other places to stream it depending on where you are in the world. I have a list here. If you are on Amazon in the US, you can watch it there. Fetch TV in Australia apparently is available to rent and buy, but you can't. It means you got to pay for it, so don't. and then also...
God, cover art for it is lovely too.
Crunchyroll in the US as well. Let's have a look, because I know we've got some friends over in Japan at the moment, so I wonder if it's still on one of their platforms. There we are, Japan. It is available on Prime Video and Google Play. So it's like $4. It's 440 yen or 550 yen, so $4 or $5 Australian.
Like,
so yeah,
that is the price of a terrible cup of coffee. Get it?
a terrible cup of coffee. Don't encourage people to get bad coffee. Do better. If
no,
you're
like, by all means, find a good cup of coffee. But it's just like, if you're desperate for a coffee, buy this instead.
Yeah.
Buy a Monster Energy drink.
For Crunchyroll, you can for Canada, you can get it on Crunchyroll as well, because I know some of our Patreons are on over in Canada as well. But yeah, look, highly recommend watching it. I actually want to go and watch it again. That's how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I definitely
like, I want to see more.
Should we get a cinema? That would be an experience.
That would be an incredible experience to see that.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do that.
So, do we just start like arranging things with
Backlot?
Backlot Cinema.
No, not Backlot. The other one, the one that does the Monreals.
Oh,
the Retro Collection.
Revival House.
Revival
there
House.
There we go.
I mean,
Revival
can
House.
Can we get this?
Well, I mean, we just go in and go, "Hi, we're Anime Podcast Group. Would you let us host Anime Podcast Nights and we will host the event for you?" And then we can then promote it and be there and give people background beforehand.
I mean, but like, do they have the ability to do digital as well? Or?
They do, but they prefer to do...
35 mil?
Yeah.
Yes.
But like, some
you
of
can
these
get
are
the reel for this.
But I mean, like, they do a lot of anime films on the reel. They had the Akira, the 40th anniversary Akira on reel.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I would love to do events like that.
Yeah. I think that'd be fun. Like, I considered doing it with Luna, but Luna seemed like they've already got a cast and people who they go to for everything.
Yeah, Luna, look, they're not mainstream, but they're too mainstream for us.
Yeah.
Like, we couldn't approach them and be like, we'd love to collab with you, because they'd be like, no.
It's that they are an institution of their own. They have their own sort of, like, big name clout status.
They do.
In their own community.
They do.
We're still small time.
We're small fish.
We're smart fishies. Run away from the sharks.
I prefer to be a small fish.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Anyway, look, go watch it. It's a fantastic film. It is well and truly worth your time. It's about an hour 50, including credits.
It's bloody good.
It's worth the time.
Yeah.
And find the biggest screen you can. Preferably not your phone.
A 70-inch plasma screen TV.
I was going to say, sometimes the biggest screen doesn't work out.
This is true.
Could we project it on the side of a building?
Hell yeah.
Look, we could, but it wouldn't look good. Unless it's late at night. And then
side of Parliament
everyone.
House, I'd do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I was going to say, Parliament House always lights up. We could just do it on there.
No, that's terrible. You don't want it lit up, because otherwise then you're competing with the other lights.
No, no, I mean, instead of them lighting it up, we just use that for the...
Oh, God, yeah.
Wi-Fi Radio.
What's she doing? Where'd she go?
She's behind the crouching dragon.
That's where we're going to leave things for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Next time,
Eaten of the East.
No, but we are going to do Eaten of the East this year. We are doing it this year. It's on the list.
Booyah.
We don't know what we're doing next episode, because previously we had Pokemon movies listed here.
I'm down for that.
But that will be three sets of films back to back.
We
need to do something to kind of spice things up. But look, if you have enjoyed what you've
Pikachu
liked,
Pikachu while getting electrocuted.
No.
Look, I mean, look, set up little.
One of our Patreon members, Kagu, does have a way to do that. We're not going to do that.
Kagu, what the hell?
Don't ask questions you're better off not knowing.
Yeah.
Kagu, what the hell?
And for legal reasons, we cannot discuss this further.
Yes. Now,
Kagu, what the hell?
If you have enjoyed what you've heard, please hit the subscribe and like button and all the usual stuff. Big thank you to our Patreon members. Again, apologies. I did chat to you all over in the Discord, but I have been delayed putting out the Patreon content because I've been traveling and literally editing every day for work, and I have been so burned out because of that.
Having a chat behind the scenes about other Patreon content we could do for you guys.
Yeah.
well, there has been a demand for more stuff for your more Patreon-y types.
Yes.
So,
well, look,
we've got a few ideas.
We've been discussing, I think we might have flagged this last episode, that we are looking to kind of do a section focusing on these old school Japanese films, the ones that became so iconic that they've influenced modern manga and anime creators, and how that influence has come in. So that's something we might be looking to do in the future. Mm-hmm. We don't know if that'll be on the main channel or the Patreon or just as extras. We'll figure it out once we've got planning underway. Now that I'm actually back home and should be here until at least October. So
join Patreon just in case. You don't want to miss out on any of our content.
Yes, give dollars. Dollary
on our pre-show, we get to say all the naughty words.
Yeah, anyway, a big thank you to our Patreon members, as always, for sticking with us. And if you do want more content, what the boys said, jump on there. So yes, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. I believe Tifa should be back off her night shift roster then, so she should hopefully be joining us.
Yay.
It may be Pokemon, it may be Eden's the Weast, it could even be Paprika, who knows? Yeah, but that's coming up later in the year, actually.
That movie is drugs.
Yeah. No, Paprika, surely not.
It's spice.
It's spicy. Anyway.
The spice.
Oh, dear. Thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to Wi-Fi Radio. And until next time, what's anime?
Is there a June anime?
Walk around rhythm and you will not attract the worm.
The worm is attracted already.
The worm is very attracted.